And we bring in the professor, Ron Wotus. Well, how are you today?
Marty, good morning. You know, I'm trying to find a quiet and a dry and a warm place to talk because we got a little rain going on out there right now.
Yeah, it made me think of course, our favorite place, River Islands. And, you know, I thought to myself, I said, boy, in the old days, if it was raining, you had to go out and go to houses and look at them. But today you go online, riverislands.com. You could see everything you need to see. Amazing.
That's really a great feature, isn't it? To be able to go on the computer, stay dry and take a look. You know, look at all the different floor plans they have. As you know, they have a lot of different floor plans to look at. And then when you narrow it down, you head on out and you go there live. And once you get out there and see that clear blue sky, you're going to absolutely love it.
Boy, I miss it. I will tell you that. Yesterday, a great day at the ballpark. Hunter Pence goes on the Wall of Fame. My son Aaron was out at the park yesterday with about 100 co-workers from Impossible Burger. I love it.
Nice.
It was out there yesterday. But for you, Woe, you were part of the festivities. Hunter Pence, give me your take on it. I'm anxious to hear what you thought.
Well, you know, I've stated before, anytime you honor one of the great giants, you know, the San Francisco Giants do it better than anybody in baseball. And they fly in his teammates and his family, et cetera, et cetera. And I just thought it was another great day, certainly for me. You know, when you get these guys together, and Hunter has been so instrumental in our two World Series, you know, that you just can't help to be excited and have a smile on your face. And then we had certainly Javi Lopez, who's doing a great job broadcasting now, and Gregor Blanco, George Contos, who we see on TV, were out here. Amongst the Hall of Famer, we had Orlando Cepeda make an appearance last night. Of course, the home run king was here. It's just great. And, you know, that's what this game's all about. It's about the great players. It's about the history. And I'm so happy for him to get on the wall with a lot of other great Giants that were a big part of the success in this organization.
Boy, Orlando was 85 yesterday. It was his birthday yesterday. So it was great to – I talked to him yesterday. And, well, he recounted every pitch almost of the ninth inning of the 1962 World Series when McCovey hit the line drive to Richardson. Orlando was on deck. And they pitched to McCovey, a lefty, a righty pitched to a lefty because they didn't want to face Orlando. How about that?
Wow, that tells you how different the game is today. But that was a tough decision. There's no doubt about it with those two guys, those two Hall of Famers. So it's amazing that he can recount that. I'm going to have to go over and say hello to him once in a while. You know, he lives about a mile and a half from me. So it was good to see him yesterday, and hope I can see him in the future to chat and hear some more of those stories.
Yep, the baby bull, Cha-Cha, 85 yesterday. And, you know, you mentioned a few of the people who were there, and Michael Morse. Well, I still enjoy Michael Morse. I remember when he came up with the Mariners. It was a shortstop, I think, when he first came up.
Yeah.
But that home run he hit against Neshek and the Cardinals, you know, people ask me the thrills at the park. That's one of it for me. That's probably in my top 10.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, I neglected to mention his name, but it was great to see him. I haven't seen him in a few years, and we had a lot of laughs, a lot of fun. And you're right, he started off as a shortstop, that big fella. I remember watching him at shortstop, and, of course, he ended up playing left field and first base for us. But you're right, that home run that he hit, you know, that has to go down as one of the biggest home runs in Giants history. You know, it's got to be in the top 10 somewhere because it changed the game. I mean, we were going to lose that game until he came through with that home run. And it changed the game. And obviously our backs were against the wall in that series. You know, we were down 3-1. So that was a tremendous home run, a tremendous decision by Boach. He had other options on the bench. And we liked the matchup there. He didn't want to base it. He wanted to go for the downs. You know, Boach loved the tonk. He called it the tonk, not a homer. And he called in Mike Morse, and he delivered.
Boy, he did. Righty on righty. How about that? Boy, the matchup people would be spinning in their grave today.
Well, you know, the bench was the bench. You know, we had a couple veterans, and you have a veterans in that situation, and I don't even know if we had any left-handed options, to be honest with you. I can't remember. I get the years confused once in a while. But He was the right guy. Power. I think there was two outs at the time. And, you know, when a player does that, it makes you, you know, obviously your decision look even that much smarter. So big moment for Michael Morris, big moment in that series.
Well, I'm glad he could be there yesterday. A lot of things are being written now with the new rules going into baseball next year. Everyone's coming up with some variations. And one I saw this week I thought I'd ask you about, someone said they should get rid of the intentional base on balls. Look, Aaron Judge's 57 home runs, Goldschmidt's going for a triple crown, Judge's as well. And maybe fans come to the park, they pay the money, and you should have to pitch to the guy. What do you think about that?
Well, I understand the person's point from a fan's perspective. You're asking a guy that's played the game since Little League and has been a minor league manager and been in the National League his whole life as a bench coach. And it's such a big part of the game for me, the game of baseball, is decisions that you make in the game and the ability to manage the game, whether you're the bench coach or the manager. You know, bench coach, you're managing the game alongside with the manager, trying to decide what to do. And I just always thought baseball was a thinking man's game. There's not a lot of action. There's a lot of decisions to make, and I thought that was a big part of the game. And so if you take away the manager's ability to manage the game, I think we're simplifying a game to a different level. Just like I wasn't a fan of a pitcher has to face three batters. You know, you have first and second, the game on the line in the eighth inning. You bring in a pitcher, he walks the first two guys, and you can't even take him out. You can't manage the game. You know, they're restricting how you manage it. So I understand the point of view from the fan on that, but I don't think it's going to create that much more excitement for the fans. I like the ability for the manager to manage the game, and that should be a big part of the game as well.
All right, the professor, as we go to school with Woe here on a Sunday. The other thing that came up about the rules next year, of course, they're going to do away with the shift. And someone said, you know something? Not all the infields are created equally. Colorado, well, and I remember talking to you about this when I went to Colorado for the first time. I saw the infield. It looked like twice the size of a regular dirt infield. And the argument is that every infield should be uniform because if you got a bigger dirt infield, you could play deeper and you sort of bring the shift back again. What do you think about that?
Oh, I don't like it. I think that we're taking away the personality of different ballparks and different fields. And, you know, if you can make the air the same in all ballparks, maybe we should do that, because when you hit a ball in Denver, it flies through that light air quicker than it does at our ballpark, you know, especially when there's a little mist like this. So I think they should leave it alone. I think that if you're worried about being fair and having the same cut, well, then they need to grow the grass the same at every ballpark. It has to be the same height, because the grass slows down the ball more in a ballpark than a little extra dirt in Denver where the ball really flies off the bat. That's going to be impossible to do. You go down to San Diego and L.A., they barely have that. You know, I don't know what kind of grass they have, but it's, you know, it's almost like a carpet. You can putt on those fields. And, of course, our grass here at our ballpark, and you go east at a lot of them, and the grass is thick and it slows the ball down. So, I don't think everything needs to be uniform. The ballparks aren't uniform. Look at Yankee Stadium, the right field. If we were playing over there, we'd have probably 30 more home runs this year. So leave the dirt alone, in my opinion.
Okay. All right. That's why you're the professor. So we got you going on a couple of those. A couple of things that came up in baseball this week that was written about. And one was fungos. And, hitting a fungo. And you have to explain to the audience what a fungo is. But they're doing away with hitting fungos and now using machines. And the argument is that the player doesn't get the true bounce off the fungo bat, and they should go back to fungos. What do you think about that?
Well, a fungo is usually, you know, a longer, lighter bat that's easier for the coach to utilize. You know, it's not as heavy, so you're swinging it, you know, a couple hundred times, if not more, a day. So you want to be able to handle that thing and control it, hit the ball where you want. So that's what a fungo is, and we use it to hit ground balls and use it to hit fly balls. You know, there are machines being used, like Kai uses this little red machine for some drills on the side for glove position. And I think the machines are fine for, you know, glove provision, position. You can put different spins on the ball, some top spin, et cetera, like that. So they have their place. But there's no substitute for the fungo on the field for hitting balls to the guys. And we try to do the same thing with fungo. You know, you try to hit a ball that has a top spin. You get on the side by the dirt, like on the third baseline, and you hit choppers to the third baseman. So the ball's bounding. It's not staying low on the grass. And some of these machines can do those things as well. But the favorite drill that I like and a lot of coaches like is the live fungo. You have a guy tossing you the ball, and now you're hitting it like your batter's hitting the ball. Now the infielder could work on his pre-pitch movement. He has to time the toss and read the ball live off the bat. The machines don't do those things. It's a little bit like, okay, the ball's just shooting in there. There's no pre-pitch involved because, again, it's the timing of the machine. But they have their place, just like the pitching machines are being used today during batting practice, right? You never saw a pitching machine out there. You just saw the arms. But now we're using the pitching machine to throw breaking balls. So the benefit is, you know, it's harder to time that machine because you don't see the arm and you can't time the rhythm. But again, you're getting the benefits of a breaking ball or more velocity, et cetera, et cetera.
Boy, and it's a long bat, so I guess you can control what you're going to do with it. But the fungo, there was a coach for the old Los Angeles Angels, as they called them in those days, Jimmy Reese, who used to pitch batting practice using a fungo bat. That's what he used to do. Did you ever try that?
Absolutely. Because of him, I'd go on the mound, and you'd hit one when the cage was empty. I didn't have a hitter in there. I mean, I've done it a couple times with a hitter just messing around like before BP and see if you can throw strikes with it. The other thing I like to do is, you know, when you hit the ball into the guy in the bucket, you're shagging in the outfield. The guy's standing there at the bucket behind second base, and you hit all the balls that are hit into him. You hit it in the air right to him so he doesn't have to move. So we all have these games with the fungos that we do just to, you know, enjoy it a little bit. I've hit balls to players, people in the stands are yelling, hey, they want a ball, and I'll be behind second base, and I'll launch one and try to hit it right to them. So it's a little fun, you know, to be able to do that stuff. And how about the fungo golf, Marty? You've seen guys around the ballpark here doing that. Players used to go out, they'd all grab a fungo, and they would play fungo golf. And they would cup somewhere, and they go around the ballpark trying to hit the ball close to the cup, and they play fungo golf.
I love it. It's always fun. Everything you could find at the ballpark, you could always find something. One last one for you, Woe, before we let you run here. I know the weather's not great. A runner scored from second on a wild pitch yesterday. It was Cleveland, and it was a big run in the game, and Gary Sanchez was the catcher for the Twins, and he was in the one-legged stance, as we see many use today, and he couldn't corral the ball. But the big thing was he didn't know where it went. And nobody really gave him any help. And it reminded me of Matt Duffy scoring from second again against the Cardinals. We thought about Morse for a minute. But how about that play? Scoring from second on a wild pitch. How about that?
It was exciting because Matt Duffy not only scored from second, but he just got called up. I think that was the first series that he was involved with. He came right to Kansas City, started at shortstop for us, and scored from second on the wild pitch. And all base runners, you know, the key to base running is always try to get to the next base. You want to push it. Don't be happy. You hit a single, think double. You hit a double, think triple. Well, a good baseball runner on a ball in the dirt or a wild pitch, don't think that, you know, the first base, in Duffy's point, he said, the heck with third. I'm getting the third. I want to get home. And so you watch that ball, and that kicks away, and he did it. So, yeah, no, that was an exciting play. I'd like to pull that video up because it was a great moment for Matt Duffy, and I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, one last one. Paul Goldschmidt had a video of him going from third to home, and he got in the lane where the throw was going to be, and he didn't run on the foul side, but he ran inside, totally legal, and blocked the throw. How about that?
That is legal, and again, a heads-up base runner is always looking to do that. So, You know, it happens mostly on a ground ball to third. Say the infield's in and there's a runner on third and he's going on contact, which means as soon as the ball's put in the ground, he's going to go. Well, if that ball's hit towards the third base bag, when you run to home, you don't want to run in foul territory. You want to get on inside the line like Goldschmidt does. He did. And it happens at a lot of the bases. It could happen at first base. It could happen anywhere. You can get picked off, right? You get picked off at first base. You know the first baseman's on the inside of the infield. He's not on the outside. When you start running a second, you've got to swerve in line with the throw. And the only place you can do that is at home plate, right? When the catcher fields a ball or a pitcher towards the first baseline, you have to stay in that three-foot lane in foul territory. So that's the only place that you can't do it. Now, you can do it on all the other baselines within reason. If the umpire, you know, sees you going, you know, 5 feet out of direction to do it, you know, then he's going to call you out and he's not going to allow it. But if you stay fairly close to the baseline and you can do that, and it's a heads-up play.
I love it. Very good. Hey, well, have a great afternoon. Stay dry. I hope the game gets in without any delays. And look forward to talking to you next week from Arizona.
Look forward to talking to you as well. And, Marty, it's a scene here that I don't see very often. You know, Greg Elliott's out there with the group. They got the squeegees, and they're pushing water off the tarp. So hopefully I know this crew will have the field ready if they can.
All right. Terrific. Have a good afternoon. Take care.
You too, Marty. Bye-bye.
All right. That is the professor, Ron Wotus. Bill is up next with Eno Saris from The Athletic. Eno's got some very interesting theories. You're going to enjoy this. Coming up right here on The Sports Leader.